It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Seth Tupper, enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. And Seth, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for joining us today as well.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Well, let's start out in Rapid City. Yesterday, the Philip man accused of spilling beer on Native American students at a hockey game last January was acquitted of disorderly conduct. And Seth, what's been the response in the community to that verdict?
Well, it's been what you might expect. A lot of Native Americans are upset at the verdict, and they've been very vocal throughout the entire process. And that has continued. I mean, we've gotten a lot of comments. I haven't had a lot of time to review them yet, but I know we've got a lot of comments on our website about it. And I'm assuming that I've been out on an assignment this morning, but I'm assuming we took some calls and emails on it. And that's been the case every other time we've covered the story. So, you know, a lot of people were convinced that there was something racially motivated that happened here. And they think that this is another example of race dominating an issue in South Dakota and white people getting the better of it. And that's you know, there's a segment of people that just believe that's the case, and a judge saying otherwise just isn't going to change that belief.
Well, you mentioned the judge. What were the reasons that the judge reached the not guilty verdict?
I haven't had a chance to read the. I was on a different story yesterday. I haven't had a chance to read the decision yet. I've just read our coverage, but from what I gather, and I did cover the trial. I sat through every minute of the trial, and what I gather is there just wasn't, you know, although there was a lot of conflicting testimony. The city prosecuted the case and put a dozen or so people on the stand, and nobody's story matched up perfectly. That's not a criticism of the witnesses, but you know, anytime you have an emotionally charged incident like this, and you ask people afterward, they're probably all going to remember it a little bit differently. And you know, there was the one point of agreement. Well, one of the points of agreement seemed to be that this did happen after a goal was scored at this hockey game, and it was a celebratory moment, and people were putting their hands in the air. And at this point, the beer was either spilled or sprayed or poured or whoever you believe, but that was the point in the game, and the judge appeared to say that, you know, there just wasn't, the city just didn't meet the burden of proof to show that there was an intentional act to, intentionally put beer on children, so I guess there was reasonable doubt that it was just an accident.
What has been the mayor's reaction to the verdict, Mayor Steve Allender?
I haven't heard from the mayor yet. Yesterday, the city attorney, Joel Landine, who prosecuted the charge, spoke on the city's behalf and expressed disappointment and just expressed their commitment to trying to get a conviction and their general disappointment with the verdict. Haven't heard Mayor Allender's reaction yet.
What does this not guilty verdict mean, do you think, for race relations in Rapid City?
Well, it further strains the relations. There's no doubt about that. When there was a rally after the incident happened in January, there was a rally at the Civic Center that hundreds of people attended. And I think, you know, for a lot of Native Americans that live in Rapid City or come to Rapid City regularly, it just reminded them of things that have happened to them that they felt were racially motivated, that they've dealt with over the years. And with this with this happening to children, whatever happened or didn't happen, they perceived that something racially motivated had happened to kids, and then that became a flashpoint because it felt like, whereas if it's happening to you, maybe you sort of grin and bear it. If it's happening to children, that's a different thing, and so it became a real rallying point. And I don't think it'll be forgotten anytime soon. And unfortunately, it just kind of puts another strain on some already strained relations.
Jonathan Ellis, taking this story beyond Rapid City, do you see this as having a broader statewide impact regarding particularly race relations in South Dakota?
Well, I mean, you know, there was a lot of interest, I think, in this story when it first happened, and then when the accusations first occurred, and then of course it was down. You know, they only tried to prosecute him for disorderly conduct, and you know. That a lot of Native Americans thought that he should be prosecuted for something far worse, and then, you know, then not to be able to even meet the burden of proof for disorderly conduct. I mean, I think, you know, within certain communities of Native communities, they'll see this as an injustice. But at the end of the day, if you read what the judge had to say, you know, there just was, as Seth said, they did not meet the burden of proof. You know, I mean, I think that, again, in certain communities out there, they'll, I mean, this will have, you know, for them, it will be just another example of not getting justice. And so it will have some probably statewide impact.
Well, let's stay in Rapid City. The mayor, Steve Allender, wants to increase the length of his term from 2 to 4 years, the city council from 2 to 3 years. Seth, why does the mayor want to increase the terms?
Well, it's interesting. It kind of fits in with the whole mantra that he's had about basically doing what he calls the right thing, regardless of politics, and trying to get politics out of City Hall. He was police officer for many years and then police chief before he retired last year in Rapid City. And he felt, one of the reasons he ran is he felt that the ex-mayor, Mayor Quaker, had introduced too much politics in the City Hall. You know, the mayor's race and the city council races are technically apolitical. They don't identify as, you know, Republicans or Democrats or otherwise. And so that was something that he ran on, and this has been one of the things that have come out since he's taken office, that he feels like if you have longer terms, obviously you're not running, you know, for office as many times, and you're relieved maybe of some of the political burden, and he thinks that'll be a good thing for people that want to get into public office, and, you know, probably, I guess, more governing and less politicking. And, you know, he's got a little bit of credibility to be able to do this. A lot of politicians, you know, the knock would be, sure, you're trying to extend the length of your own term. But, you know, Mayor Allender hasn't been a career politician. He's been a career police officer, and this is his first go in politics. So at this point, you know, he has some credibility to be able to do some things like that and have people believe his motivations because of his track record. Longer he's in politics, that fades, obviously, but he's certainly taking advantage of that right now.
Taking this idea of this issue of term lengths beyond just Rapid City, Jonathan, is there an ideal term length, no matter the office, statewide office, city offices, county offices?
I don't think there is. I mean, you know, this was going back to the founding of the country, this was a debate that the founders had in terms of lengths. And, you know, the House of Representatives every 2 years, and that's why, you know, we consider the House of Representatives sort of the House of the People, because the House of Representatives there can be so much turnover at the whim, you know, depending on the whims of the people at the time. And, you know, I use the 2010 election here in South Dakota as an example. I mean, you know, Stephanie Hirsa Sandlin fell victim to sort of a wave election, and so there's a lot more turnover and churn within those 2 year terms. Whereas, you know, the Senate was deliberately set up as six year terms in order so they were less susceptible to sort of the whims of the people. I mean, so that was intentionally set up that way by the founders. You know, I don't know that there is an ideal term. I think personally, I think that the Senate here in this state, instead of every 2 years, was probably more of a 4 year term. I think that might help in terms of you know, some longevity of people in the Senate, in building some institutional knowledge, you know, given the fact that we have term limits. And I think, you know, within the Republican caucus, I mean, you'll see an example of this within the Republican caucus in the next legislative session, that there's a dearth of experience, really, compared to previous years. So I think that, you know, if there had been a four-year term here for our state Senate, that that might be an improvement on the process.
Seth, do you think that there are ideal term lengths?
I think you just have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. You know, in the case of the Rapid City mayor position, I can see the logic in that, you know, mayor's races, this is off the top of my head, I'd have to check this, but I think, you know, $70,000, $80,000 is not uncommon to have to raise to run a mayor's race here. And if you have to do that every 2 years, that, you know, that does get to be quite a burden for somebody who's just coming in as a regular citizen and trying to enter politics. And you know, with the size and cost of various city projects, you know, if you're somebody that wants to come in and accomplish something, as in the case of like Sioux Falls, build an arena or do some other big project, 2 years isn't a lot of time to carry out any kind of big initiative. So I can certainly see the logic in it. On the other hand, you know, some people would say, you know, the turnover is good. We want fresh people in there. We don't want career politicians. We want this to be public service. So I don't think there is any ideal across the board, you know, term limit or term. I think you just have to look at it on a case-by-case basis, like they're doing right now in Rapid City, and we'll see if people think this is a wise thing. It has been in the past, the council approved an extension of the term, but then it was vetoed by the then mayor. So this is kind of a second go around at it.
Yeah, Seth, what is the steps that need to be taken for these extension of the term limits to go into effect?
I haven't looked into it too deeply, but I would have to assume that it's just an ordinance change, a city law change. The last time around, I know the city council, approved it, and then the mayor at that time, Mayor Quaker, vetoed it. So obviously we have a different mayor in this time, and the council isn't entirely the same with some turnover, but basically the mayor would just have to make his case to the council and get it passed through.
In looking at shorter terms, Jonathan, do more frequent elections every 2 years, for example, make office holders more accountable to voters?
Well, it depends on what you mean by, you know, I mean, accountable. Sure, in one respect, it does. I mean, you know, again, going back to how the founders set up our elections here. I mean, yeah, the every 2 years was sort of, for the House of Representatives, was sort of considered a release valve of sorts for when there was great angst among the public about certain things, and those 2 year terms were an ability for people then to hold elected office holders accountable. On the other hand, you'll note that, you know, going back to the fact that the Senate has these 6 year terms, the founders were also concerned that the whims of the people were unpredictable at times, and that's why they felt that the 6 year terms were better for the more deliberative body of the Senate. So, yeah, I mean, they do hold office holders accountable those 2 year terms, but there was also some concern among the founders about having both chambers susceptible to that. So, I mean, you know, I'm just going back from my old political science classes on why the founders set up terms the way they did.
Well, going back to the way our state is set up, state senate and representatives serving 2 year terms. Jonathan, you mentioned that. Seth, what impact do you think having the Senate and the representatives here, 2 terms, with the governor serving four year terms, what impact do you think that has on state government?
Well, some people would certainly argue it diminishes the power of the legislature in favor of the power of the executive, the governor. And I think, you know, you have a pretty strong argument there if you're going to make that argument, because it is kind of, I've always thought it was kind of odd. It's just the way it's always been done, but that the entire legislature, the entire body, you know, is elected every 2 years. Meanwhile, a governor can wait through that and continue on with his 4 year term. So, you know, I think it's got to diminish the power of the legislature a little bit. Now, of course, you know, everybody doesn't get thrown out, you know, every time there's an election, but some people persist through that. But there's enough turnover that, you know, any gains that the legislature wants to make in taking back some power from the executive, I think they'd have a tough time doing that, only serving 2 year terms.
Over the past few weeks, political commentators and junkies on this show and elsewhere have mentioned possible Democratic candidates to run against U.S. Senator John Thune in 2016. Kevin Wooster suggested former lawmaker Flank Klocek, who wasn't interested. Rapid City filmmaker and journalist Sam Hurst's name has come up. And on the show a few weeks ago, Kevin also suggested Sioux Falls TV weatherman Phil Schreck. Others have mentioned his name as well. And in response, Schreck has tweeted, "Thune has about $11.5 million in his war chest. With more to come, I have like $11.5. Jonathan, how likely is it that Phil Schreck would run for U.S. Senate? Why is his name being mentioned?
Well, that tweet, which was kind of funny, would indicate that He sees that Phil, and I haven't talked to Phil about this, so let everybody know I haven't actually had any first-hand conversations with him about this, but, it would show that he's, maybe skeptical about a run. I've been told that he's being courted pretty heavily, to get into the race. And you talk about why is his name being mentioned. Well, Phil Schreck is a pretty respected guy. He's a TV, he's on television, so he's got some name recognition. And that's something that, frankly, for Democrats, they don't have a lot of people that could just come out of the gate with a lot of name recognition. So I think that for that reason alone, he would be a pretty appealing candidate for them.
Looking at this possible candidacy, Seth Tupper, do you still see Phil Schreck as the sort of candidate that Democrats would need to wage a credible campaign against John Thune?
Well, not to rain on his parade, but, not necessarily, no. I mean, when you look back, I mean, it took somebody like John Thune to beat Tom Daschle. It took somebody like Tim Johnson to beat John Thune. It took somebody like Jim Abner to beat George McGovern. When you take on these sort of titanic figures with all, with a huge fundraising start and enormous name recognition and high popularity, usually it takes another heavyweight type of candidate to topple somebody like that. There are exceptions. Kristi Noem wasn't very well known when she started her campaign against Stephanie Hirsch-Sassanlin, but was still able to win that race. Obviously anything's possible, and there's a long time between now and the election, but to beat somebody like John Thune, you would think that it's going to take somebody with an equally big name.
Looking at John Thune, Jonathan Ellis, does he have any vulnerabilities that Democrats could take advantage of in a campaign?
I have to say, and I'm not an endorsement of John Thune or anything, because I would never do that. But I just think that right now he's a conservative, and I think that he lines up, his conservatism lines up with where a lot of the electorate of this state is at right now. Certainly everybody's got some vulnerabilities here and there on certain policy issues or whatever. But right now, I think with where the state's voters are. I think that John Thune is a reflection of a good majority of those voters. So, Democrats, with the money that he's got, he's still pretty young for a guy who's in the Senate. It's going to take, it would have to take, I think, a lot of, conditions outside of the state. If this were like 2006 or 2008, where Republicans were, the public at large was really getting kind of tired of George W. Bush and Republicans. Then perhaps you could entice one of these names that Seth talked about, into one of these titanic struggles, like a Brandon Johnson or somebody along those lines. But, right now, because he isn't that vulnerable, that's why you're not seeing more, you're not seeing bigger Democratic names, make a run at this race.
Seth Tupper, do you see any vulnerabilities that Democrats would take advantage of in a race against Senator Thune?
Boy, you really don't see any obvious ones. And, Democrats will find issues that they disagree with John Thune on, but to find, issues that are statewide, that are big enough to, overcome registration disadvantage and things like that. There just aren't that many. There isn't much low-hanging fruit there, for something that would, for example, convince Republicans to vote against John Thune, which you'd have to convince some, to beat him. So, at this moment, there doesn't appear to be anything like that.
Seth, do you expect the Democrats to come up with a candidate anytime soon?
Well, there's been one thing about it is there's been a lot more talk this time, it seems like, than the last time John Thune was up for re-election, and just nobody seemed to materialize, and it didn't seem like there was even really that much rumor of anybody getting into the race, and there does seem to be, maybe that's just because Kevin Wooster's stirring it up, I don't know, but there seems to be a lot more talk about it this time, and it just seems like there's more of a commitment from the Democrats and a realization that maybe they made a big mistake by not fielding anybody last time, and they're not going to, you know, regardless of who they come up with, they're not going to make the same mistake again.
Jonathan, do you think there'll be a Democratic candidate announced anytime soon?
Yeah, there will be. I mean, anytime soon, I don't know, but there will certainly be a Democratic candidate. I've been told that they have some people that they will that have basically volunteered. If they can't get like a Schreck or somebody else, you know, to run, that there are people who have put their name out there that said that they will be on the ballot against John Thune. So they will have a candidate.
All right, we'll have to see who that is. That'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Jonathan, thanks for joining the program.
Hey, Carl, good luck on your new gig.
Oh, thank you so much. And Seth, thanks for your time as well.
You're welcome. Thanks, Carl.